Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the National Vocational Rehabilitation Conference Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a Q&A session. At that time, if you would like to register for a question, you may press the 1 followed by the 4. If you need to reach an operator, you may press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, January 13th, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to Michelle Leger. You may begin, Ms. Leger.
Good afternoon, everyone, and Happy New Year. I actually am going to turn the call over to Nate Arnold from Social Security Administration. Nate?
Thank you, Michelle. As she said, Happy New Year, everybody. I feel like it's been a long time since we got together. We had a bunch of holidays. We've had some bad weather, and we've had a few cases of the flu. But other than that, not much has happened in the meantime. For those of you out there, we did in the meantime work a bunch of claims, which we'll talk about when we get further down in the agenda. We really do have what I consider to be an excellent agenda today. We're privileged to have some folks from the other part of ORDES, our organization, who are going to talk about work incentives for beneficiaries. And then Steve Duffy from the Office of Systems is going to talk about the long Nate Arnold promised upgrade of Vermis, which is going to bring us into at least the 20th, if not the 21st century, sometime in the near future. And I know you guys are all going to be interested in hearing about that. And then after that, talk about being anticlimactic. I will go over some cost reimbursement updates with all of you. In the interest of not having to keep our other participants on the call any longer than necessary, we're going to do a separate question and answer session for the work incentives piece immediately following their presentation. And then after that, they can get back to doing whatever important things they have on their plates. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Marcia Robinson-Vaden from the other side of ORDES. Marcia, I understand you have some other folks there with you, and you're going to go over the work incentives.
Yes. Good afternoon. Thank you. And I'd like to say Happy New Year to everybody. Besides myself, I have Rachel Vinson, Katie Perez, who's on the phone, Carl Dempsey. If we can go to slide 1. This is work while receiving benefits. I'm going to just give an overall general conversation about work incentives, but first explaining the two programs that SSA administers. That's the SSDI, which provides benefits to individuals with disabilities, that's slide 2, excuse me, who are insured by workers contributing to the Social Security Trust Fund. SSI, which is another program which the agency administers, provides cash assistance payments to the aged, blind, and disabled with limited income and access. Slide 3, the purpose of work incentives, or we also call them employment support, is to test one's ability to work by protecting entitlement to monthly cash benefits, Medicare, and Medicaid. Work incentives allow the beneficiary to remain in control of their finances and health care during their transition to work and financial independence. There are several types of work incentives that fall underneath either the SSDI program and the SSI program, or just SSDI or SSI. Slide 4 identifies several of the work incentives that fall under both programs. That's ERWI, subsidies and special conditions, unincurred business expenses, unsuccessful work attempts, continual payment while participating in voc rehab or similar program. We call it Section 301, expedited reinstatement, EXR, ticket to work. The next slide talks about the work incentives that fall within the SSDI program. That's the trial work period, extended period of eligibility, continuation of Medicare coverage, Medicare for people with disabilities who work, and protection for medical continuing disability reviews. The next slide. Last, we have several work incentives that just falls underneath the SSI program. That's the blind work expense, earned income exclusion, student earned income exclusion, the plan to achieve self-support, property essential for self-support, special SSI payments for people who work, continued Medicaid eligibility, special benefits for people eligible under Section 1619A or B who enter into a medical treatment facility, and lastly, reinstatement eligibility without a new application. We just identified several working centers that fall underneath of both either SSDI and SSI or just the SSDI or SSI. But today we just want to focus on four particular ones, working centers. First, we will have Rachel Vincent to go into a general overview about the Section 301.
Hello, everybody. I'm just going to briefly talk about Section 301. Section 301 is when somebody's payments can continue because they are participating in vocational rehabilitation or a similar program. When somebody's receiving disability, that disability decision is reviewed periodically. It's always reviewed for folks who are age 18 and then for any other person receiving benefits. And so if this claim, if their disability goes under review and they are found no longer disabled because of medical improvement, usually those benefits would stop. However, if they're participating in one of these particular programs, the benefits may continue until that program ends. What do you need to qualify for this? They must be participating in that program, and Social Security will review that program and decide if that continued participation in the program would increase the likelihood of permanent removal from the disability rolls. However, if for the age 18 through 21 people who are participating in an IEP, SSA will automatically find that that participation will increase the likelihood. And so in those situations, that decision would not be made for them. What are some examples of these services, these We Are similar services? The appropriate programs would be something like the Ticket to Work program. Someone working with a vocational rehabilitation agency using an IPE or Individualized Plan for Employment. Somebody using other support services that are provided by another service provider using an individual written employment plan. Those people who are participating in PASS or the Plan to Achieve Self-Support, which is a Title 16 or SSI program. Also, people who have an IEP who are age 18 through 21. How long will those benefits continue? Those benefits will continue until the completion of the program or the participation stops in the program, or SSA decides that continued participation in the program would not increase the likelihood of removal from the disability rolls. Once, if somebody is not, or is that they found that their disability has is not continuing, but they're participating in one of the programs that I talked about, there's a specific form that gets mailed out, and it's Form 4290. It's SSA 4290, and it can be found on, you know, with any type of search on the internet, and I think that we may have attached one today for this meeting, just so that folks who, you know, would fill this out can maybe get acquainted with this form and see what it looks like and what type of questions it would ask, so that they can aid those people a little bit better.
Okay, thank you, Rachel. Next, we'll have Katie Perez, who will give us a brief overview about an SSI work incentive dealing with student-earned income exclusion, and that's on slide number 8.
Good afternoon, everyone. Student-earned income exclusion, abbreviated by SEIE. Student-earned income exclusion is applied if you're under the age of 22 and regularly attending school. We do not count up to $1,780 of earned income per month when we figure your supplemental security income payment amount. The maximum yearly exclusion is $7,180. These amounts are for the year of 2015, and we usually adjust these figures each year based on the cost of living. The FEIE applies to individuals who are under the age of 22 and a student regularly attending school, college, or training designed to prepare him or her for a paying job. And what we mean by regularly attendance is the person takes one or more courses of study and attend classes in a college or a university for at least 8 hours per week under a semester or quarter system, grades 7 through 12 for at least 12 hours per week, a course of training to prepare him or her for a paying job for at least 15 hours per week, if that involves shop practice, or 12 hours per week if it does not involve shop practice. This kind of training includes anti-poverty programs, such as the Job Corps, government-supported courses in self-improvement. Or for less than the amount of time indicated above for reasons beyond a student's control, such as illness, if the circumstances justify the reduced credit load or attendance. A person who is homebound because of a disability may be a student when he or she studies a course or courses given by a school in grades 7 through 12 at a college or a university or government agency, and has a home visitor or tutor from the school who directs the study or training. How is the income exclusion applied? We apply the SEIE before the general income exclusion or earned income exclusion. We have an example for you. Jim is a student who earns $1,800 a month in June, July, and August of 2015. In September, he returns to school and continues working part-time. He earns $900 a month in September through December 2015. Using a student earned income exclusion, Jim can exclude $1,780 of his earnings in June, July, and August, and can exclude all of his $900 earnings in September and October. Through October, Jim will use up $7,140 of the $7,180 yearly limit, excluding $40 from his November earnings. Will use up his yearly limit. His remaining wages after deducting monthly and yearly limits will still be subject to earned income exclusion of $65 per month and one half of the remaining earned income. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Next, I personally will do a presentation, and we're on slide number 9 about PASS, the plan to achieve self-support. PASS is both an SSI and an SSDI work incentive. The PASS provision allows beneficiaries to set aside other income besides their SSI and or resources from a specific period so that they may pursue a work goal that will reduce or eliminate their SSI or SSDI benefits they currently receive. PASS is largely a self-directed plan of action for getting a particular kind of job or starting a business. In the plan, the beneficiary who completes the plan will tell SSA what job they want or what business they want to start, which is considered their goal, what they need in order to achieve that goal, such as educational training, transportation, child care, or assistive technology. And lastly, how much these things will cost, what money they will use to pay for them, such as their SSDI benefits, wages from their current job or savings. What kind of expenses can a PASS include? PASS expenses may include but are not limited to educational training, including tuition, books, supplies, transportation, including the lease, rental, purchase, repair, or modification of a vehicle, or the hire of a private or commercial courier, businesses' startup costs, including equipment, supplies, operating capital, and inventory required to establish and carry on a trade or business, child care, and personal assistance services. How does a pass work? If Social Security approves a pass for the beneficiary, we will disregard the funds used for the plan expenses when we determine SSI eligibility and payment amount. They can have a number of effects. One, in some cases, it permits SSI eligibility where eligibility otherwise would not exist. In other cases, it permits a higher SSI payment. As a result, SSI benefits replace funds used for plan expenses. Who can benefit from a pass? Any SSI or SSDI beneficiary who has income or access that will preclude or reduce SSI payments may be able to use a pass to pursue an occupational goal. What kinds of income and access can be excluded through a pass? Any income that would affect SSI eligibility or payment amount can be excluded if used to pursue a pass. This includes benefits from other programs, such as SSDI. It also includes parental income that is deemed available to a child. Are there restrictions on goals and expenses? If a beneficiary would be eligible for SSI without a pass, the job or business must be expected to generate in time enough earnings to significantly reduce the SSI benefits. If the individual is an SSDI beneficiary who would not be eligible for SSI without a pass, the job or business must be expected to result in substantial gainful activity, which we consider SGA, that would eliminate the SSDI benefits. Who prepares the pass? Anyone may help the beneficiary with their pass. For example, vocational counselor, social worker, benefit specialist, or employer. We evaluate the plan and decide if it is acceptable. We can also help the beneficiary put his or her plans in writing. SSA has specially trained employees, which are considered pass specialists, that work with the pass program. To obtain more information about the pass, anyone can contact SSA's 1-800 number or contact a local office. In addition, the beneficiary can ask for a pamphlet entitled Working While Disabled, a Plan for Achieving Self-Support, publication number 0511010. Who should a pass be submitted to? A pass application, that's Form SSA 545, is available at local Social Security offices or online. The completed form should be mailed or taken to the Social Security office serving the applicant's address. If the goal of the pass is to start a small business or micro enterprise, a business plan should accompany the pass application. Next, we'll have Pearl Dempsey to provide us information about Section 1619B, and we're on slide 10, please.
Hi, I'm going to be speaking on the Medicaid while working, or called the 1619B. This is a continuation of SSI income status for Medicaid. How does it help you? One of the biggest concerns for SSI beneficiaries have been going to work and the possibility of losing Medicaid coverage. Section 1619B of the Social Security Act provides some protection for these beneficiaries. How do they qualify? To qualify for continuing Medicaid coverage, a person must have been eligible for an SSI cash payment for at least 1 month, would be eligible for cash payment except for the earnings. They must still be disabled. They still meet all the eligible rules, including the resource test, need Medicaid in order to work, and have gross earned income that is insufficient to replace SSI, Medicaid, and any publicly funded attendance care. The threshold amount is the measure that we use to decide whether your earnings are high enough to replace your SSI and Medicaid benefits. Your threshold amounts are based on Number one, the amount of earnings that would cause your SSI cash benefits to stop in your state and the average Medicaid expenses in that state. If your gross earnings are higher than the threshold amount in your state, you may still be eligible if you have impairment-related work expenses, line work expenses, a plan to achieve self-support, publicly funded attendant or personal care, or medical expenses above the average state amount. Now, do all states use the same Medicaid eligibility rules? Most states use the eligibility rules to determine Medicaid eligibility. However, the following states use their own eligibility rules for Medicaid that are different from our SSI eligibility rules. These 10 states are Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, North Dakota, Minnesota, Missouri, New Hampshire, Ohio, Oklahoma, and Virginia. If you live in one of these states, you will continue to be eligible for Medicaid under Section 1619B if you were eligible for Medicaid in the month before you became eligible for the section.
Okay, now we're on slide number 11. So that's the conclusion of our general overview of the four individual work incentives. So if anyone needs any additional information about these work incentives or information about any other work incentives that fall underneath SSDI, SSI, you can always go to the Rear Book on Employment Support, or you can more or less work, ask for the publication Working While Disabled, How We Can Help. Are there any questions?
Operator, are the lines open for questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question, you may press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. And it appears we have no audio questions at this time, sir.
I think that just indicates that the presentation was obviously clear and well presented. I want to thank Marcia, Carol, Katie, and Rachel for taking their time, taking the time to be with us and to cover that. I think it's important that everybody out there at least be aware of these provisions. I know a lot of you don't work directly with our clients, but you should be aware of the various provisions that SSA has out there to encourage our beneficiaries to try to work and return to work. And as we like to have as a motto around here is reminding them that nobody ever lost money by going back to work. Always winds up in improving their life economically and in a lot of other ways. So thank you all again.
You're welcome.
I think we're ready for part two of the agenda, which is the modernization of VIRMAs. I'm going to turn it over to Steve Duffy.
Nice to be able to talk to you today. So I'm going to go over a few things that you can look forward to, hopefully about this time next year, assuming SSA has all the money it needs to continue development. So you are probably already a little bit familiar with the ticket to work system that you currently use with Maximus, where you sign in to their employer network portal. And you would also know that Social Security is going to be replacing part of that system with one of its own over the next 6 months, more or less. You should see a fair amount of development available by the end of March. That's geared for the ticket program, but we're also going to be using the same thing to help deal with the vocational rehabilitation program as well. So on the exact same screen that you would see for ticket to work purposes, if you are a VR, you would have a dedicated menu item which would let you help see what SSA is up to in dealing with the VR cases. So, for example, you would be able to enter the VR case yourself. If you felt like it, you could type it in. If you had a more advanced automation system, you could import a piece of text which would represent that vocational rehabilitation claim. As soon as it's accepted by SSA, you'll be able to see that it has been taken by SSA. You'll know what its stage of completion is. And you'll also know if SSA wants anything back from you. So, for example, if it's a PBR case, once cases are paid or denied, you'll see a complete listing of all payments and denials. You'll see exactly why you were paid what, or if you were denied, you will see the exact reason why. You'll have the opportunity to resubmit claims at any time. Your colleagues here at Woodlawn and Social Security will also be using the same system, but with a different interface. Yours will be at this portal application. They'll be using an existing application inside of SSA where they'll be able to type things into the system, adjudicate them with some more automation, and this should help reduce some of the backlog of BR cases as well and save SSA some money in processing these cases. One of the questions was, is that do you have to be cleared to be able to access the EN portal? The answer is yes, just like you would if you were trying to get to this EN portal, which is its name. We'll change it to something more acceptable to VRs. It's not just ENs and not just tickets. It will also be for vocational rehabilitation claims as well. You do have to be cleared through the SSA clearance process. It does require access with two-factor authentication. This authentication is the same thing that's effective for a few of the users today who are piloting the EN portal. Namely, it does not send a telephone call to something close to you, and instead what it does is it sends an SMS message to a cell phone. The SMS message is a handful of digits, might be 7, 8, 9, and what you end up doing is typing that information into the login screen, and then it takes you on your merry way. The part that deals with the vocational rehabilitation application is fairly straightforward. It'll allow you to get things into the system faster. It'll allow you to understand exactly what has been received by SSA and what are the stages of processing. It should allow them to process the claims faster, and it'll give you an eternal history as to what's happened to claims in the past. It should be a fairly straightforward, I'm thinking. And let me see. There were a few other questions. Yes, it will have an audit trail system, so anything folks do, we keep track of it. As a matter of fact, for BR cases in particular, we keep track of everything. Even if you just looked at a case, you'll know who did it and when. All of our applications are 508 compliant. SSA has a dedicated staff that beats me up about this all the time in order to ensure that all of our automation facilities are fully accessible to persons with disabilities. We're not talking about IVR today because that's something that you have to address to your colleagues in ORDAS. They haven't asked for that capability yet. So at present, we're just talking about an interactive web-based application, the EN portal. There will be the ability to have some different levels of security. You won't see that right away in March of this year with Ticket, but it'll be introduced with Ticket later on in the year. Basically, where you can, on your own, establish some tierage between your users. Basically, most people will be able to see anything, but you would be able to control who can make a claim, who can see certain things, who can download things with what level of PII. So there will be some level of that as well. If someone decides to steal the credentials of a portal user, I have to leave that in the hands of your agency. They'll also have to steal your cell phone, too. And generally, it's hard to steal something if you don't write it down. I do know that people make a big deal about making sure that nobody's looking over your shoulder and whatnot, but that is not how credentials are stolen. Credentials are stolen because somebody writes them down, or you choose to use the same password for this application that you use for 30 other applications as well. So persons who, you get to select your own user ID, you get to select your own password, you have to check your, change your own password just once every 6 months. You do have to have a cell phone. We do not care who provides it or something that can accept SMS messages. If you start forwarding your SMS messages around and doing things like that to Gmail, we will lock you out of your account forever. So you don't want to do that. You actually want to have the little device in your hand. Again, we don't care if it's a personal device or provided by the agency or by anyone else.
So we do expect, we do say, as a term of service, is you're the person who's responsible for maintenance of the privacy of your user credentials and of any information you see on the screen or any information you choose to download. In most cases, this is between you and your state. It's up to what level of responsibility they would hold you if you were careless with the credentials. The last question was, if the portal goes down, will a backup be available? There's essentially 2 to 3 versions of the software running at any one time, so we don't expect the portal to go down. It would usually end up being something like an earthquake in the middle of the country breaks telecommunications cables for some period of time. That's the sort of thing that would prevent some folks from accessing the EN portal temporarily. Other than that, usually if there's an issue, it's because I made a mistake and we messed up something in the coding. It's not going to be that the portal is not available for some other technical reason. So unless someone has any other questions, will there be a manual? This is up to my fine colleagues in ORDES. It's their job to create the animal. You will be able to submit claims to the EN portal. You should be able to do it twice. I'm sorry, 2 different ways. You will still have the ability to send something in mail or fax to ORDES. You'll be able to enter the claim directly into the EN portal by typing it in. And for some states who have some more advanced office automation capabilities, you would be able to take an extract out of whatever local system you might have, and if it's formatted properly, put it into SSA's system directly, but again at the EN portal. Let me see. Suitability clearance is something that I have to have you talk to your colleagues in ORDES about. They take care of that. I do know it takes a while, but this isn't something you're going to be seeing overnight. In the near term, it is helpful for you or will be helpful for you in managing ticket and VR assignments. In the EN portal that you'll see coming generally available at the end of March, you'll be able to see who you have assigned to you, what the ticket payment method is. If it's a VR cost reimbursement case, you'll be able to see the ones that you used to have. You'll be able to make your own assignments or enter in directly your own VR assignments. You'll be able to unassign them or to show that they've left. You'll be able, in certain instances, you'll be able to convert tickets to VR cases and VR cases to tickets. Those are all things that you should have available in the near term. If you are submitting something electronically, we won't take it if it's not formatted properly. Now, we will give you detailed specifications as to what it is that we don't like, and it's up to you to take care of it. Now, there's 2 different things that we're talking about here. One is something that you'll have available shortly, shortly being in SSA terms in a few months. Currently, you can upload CSV files directly to the, I guess they call it Move It. You'll be able to do this at the EN portal along with being able to view things that are assigned to you. The format that you'll be using to start off with is exactly the same as the one that you have right now. You'll also get the same sort of error codes back, but there will also be some more stuff added to the end of the transaction. And most of these transactions take place right away. So if you were to upload a file, you'll probably find that it's ready for you to download the results in 5 to 10 minutes, if not sooner than that. It's the same thing if you were typing in an assignment request at the EN portal a few months from now. It will, if it says that it took, it did. And when you go back and you look at your list of beneficiaries who are currently assigned to you, you'll see that person is now on the list. So most of these things will happen right away. There's very little that happens in the background. The only thing that takes a little while is some of these longer CSV lists where it might be that you want to assign someone, unassign someone, open a VR case, close a VR case, look for eligibility. The only thing whose output will be different and will give you something perhaps in 3 to 4 weeks is when you're interested in determining the assignability. That the output is a little bit different than what you're used to seeing right now. It'll be more like the actual output as if you had tried to assign them, except that an assignment didn't really happen. So most of the things that you're used to seeing and working with right now will be the same. The set of error messages that you get, currently you get a single-digit return code that's set by Maximus. It might be anything from a 0 to like a 12 or a 13. You'll continue to get that. You will also get an SSA return code, of which there are about 100. And in most cases, this will help you figure out exactly why something didn't work. It'll be very specific. It'll tell you this field has to have been an N or a Y or an X. You don't know what you put in there, but it's not an N or a Y or an X. Try again. You'll also have a written documentation that will describe each of the fields. You'll be able to download these error codes so that we update them. If we change something on you, it's done right away so that you can get some immediate help. The last one says, I don't think that you should have any issues formatting for the system. The difference is you will not be able to automatically submit something by automation to SSA, one of these new files. So, for example, if you have a process that currently creates one of these CSV files, you'll be able to use the same business process to create that CSV file. And I believe in almost all instances, you'll be able to use the same process to process the answer as well. The difference is, in order to actually send it to SSA, you have to log into the EN portal and upload it. At that point in time, the only checking it's going to be doing is making sure you're not sneaking in a prohibited character, and that there is some high-level formatting is in place, and anything else will come back to you when it's processed in the background after a few minutes. It all depends upon how much other work is in place. So if someone like the state of California submits like a 500,000 rows, it might be more than a few minutes. As a matter of fact, if you submit a lot, I think the number is like over 10,000. We might not give it back to you until the next day. So if you did it in smaller files, it would work out just fine. I'm afraid that I can't help you with the Morrow ticket tracker. All I can tell you is that I'll be providing whomever you choose to with a format where you can submit the claims electronically. It'll be a piece of XML, if you're familiar with that at all. It's just a piece of text that can be created and uploaded into the system. Right now, Morrow doesn't actually do anything, as I understand it, other than to print out something that you mail off to SSA. So if you want to continue doing that, it's not a problem. SSA will take your claim. If you want to take what is printed out and put it into the EN portal directly, you can do that as well. Regarding the SMS system, is that's what SSA has, and that's the only thing we're approved to use. So it will be you have to be able to accept an SMS message and to type that message back into SSA's screen. I'm afraid I have no flexibility in that area. Let me see what else that we have, since I don't have the right glasses. Let me swap reading glasses. There's a question that says, some way can your system generate email? So are you talking about, if you're talking about email for the login code, no. I'm afraid that's not something that I can change. What I am interested in is this is an opportunity for folks who have ideas that might make things better, is if I can do things without increasing the cost of the system and I am under a budget, this is the time to hear. So I can't think of anything off of the top of my head, but I do know that a number of states, for example, they worry about making sure that they don't miss the period of 9 months of continuous SGA and so on. And that ought to be the sort of thing that we can build into the system to tell you, you know, you closed this VR case. You told us it was successfully closed. We see in our system that we now have a 9-month period of continuous SGA. We don't have a claim from you. If you have something that goes to the MOVE-IT system, then you can continue to use that. What goes into the system from MOVE-IT is something that we should be compatible with. I don't see any issues. He may have to do something a little bit different to take care of some of the additional data that we're sending back. You cannot use the MOVE-IT system. The federal security guidelines don't allow us to use FTP in most cases, and that's what MOVE-IT relies on. What we can do, and unfortunately this requires a level of sophistication and expense that some people don't want to go to, is accept web services. However, again, outside of my control, that's been turned into a big deal. There has to be a signed agreement and so on and so forth, but that then involves machine-to-machine communications. So theoretically, you could submit a file, but it has to be via web service. It cannot be by FTP, which is what MOVE-IT uses. It's not considered adequately secure.
Operator, at this time, we'd like to open it up for questions over the phone as well. We'll continue to monitor the chat line, but I'd like to hear if there's anybody who wants to talk to Steve directly.
Of course. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to register for an audio question, you may press the 1 followed by the 4. And we do have a question from the line of Mr. Brian Connors, the California Department of Rehabilitation from California. You may begin, sir.
Thank you. I have a question about cases where there is a status 3. Now, you had mentioned that you can reassign a ticket through the portal. Typically, what we do is we ask our consumers to sign the unassignment form, and then we fax it into Maximus, which I guess all agencies are doing. So my question is, how can we ensure that the ticket is properly reassigned in the case of a consumer signing an IPE here, and then we reassign that ticket through the system?
You know, if what we're talking about is the standard assignment of a ticket, you would simply, the fastest way for you to do it is to go to the EN portal, type in their social security number and the assignment date, and we'll tell you whether it took or not. If it took, it did. It's done.
So do we still need to fax in those unassignment forms?
No.
To, no?
No.
We're talking about the future. Make sure that's clear.
For the future. Right. My colleagues here in Ordez want to make sure that you understand this is through the EN portal. So once you have access to the EN portal, one of the things you can do is any number of onesies assignments or unassignments or VR case openings or closings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But, we typically contact the employment network before we attempt to do the unassignment. Is that proper protocol?
Yes, that's fine.
So the handoff going from you have to help me out. I'm not a VR expert, although I pretend I am sometimes.
I guess the situation is sometimes a consumer will come here, open up a case here, and while they still have they're receiving services from the employment network, not knowing that the sequential service provision of ticket to work. So in a lot of cases, it's a surprise to the employment network that the consumer has come here for services as well. And then we'll go ahead and initiate an unassignment with the consumer, and then the employment network will contact us and say, you know, what's going on? You know, why are you leaving? You know, why are they going to you and they're leaving us? So that's why we try to contact the employment network, but sometimes it's not a pure system.
Well, all it can tell you is you'll have a lot of information at your fingertips. So, for example, you'll have a screen where either you or an EN can see the entire assignment history for a particular beneficiary. One way or the other. So people have an opportunity to check things out.
It'll also have a little legend on it that'll tell you whether, if they're not assigned, whether they are assignable or what conditions they have to meet to be assignable. And if even if they're already assigned, if they unassigned and reassigned, what conditions would they have to meet in order to be assignable?
Okay. So then the status 3 situation won't really occur anymore. Once an IPE is signed and we send that file to you, then it will just happen automatically, and we won't need to take any action to
I need to know more about what a status 3 thing is. Are you, this is a return code from Maximus?
Yeah, it's the code that is assigned to a ticket holder where an individual has been receiving services from an employment network, and then they come to the VR agency, open up a case, and sign the IPE.
Right.
So what that's telling us is that we need to initiate an unassignment, get the consumer to sign an unassignment, request for ticket unassignment from the employment network.
Well, all I can tell you is, as it stands right now, it's the as long as someone puts the assignment in the system, but it has to come from either SSA, the OSM, or the person who currently has the ticket. You wouldn't be able to go in and unassign a ticket just on your say-so that belongs to somebody else. They would have to do it, or SSA has to do it, or the OSM has to do it. The only time you can unassign something is if it's already been assigned to you or it's already open as a VR case with you.
Okay.
But you'll also be able to use this to find out if that unhappy condition exists. So,
and that assignment would take place from the VR agency when we send the file to you, right?
Yeah, I see up here, 3 means the ticket is with another EN, yes. So basically, if you have something and you think you should have it, but it's assigned to someone else or is a cost reimbursement case with somebody else, they have to ditch the ticket or the VR case before you can pick it up.
Oh, okay. So it has to be an assignable status then, is what you're saying.
Yes,
and we're going to have Karen Davison, your senior account manager, get in touch with you. Can we have your name so Karen can contact you to follow up on your questions today? This is Michelle Legere from OSM.
Yeah, hi, Michelle. This is Brian Connors.
Okay, Brian. We'll have Karen Davison follow up with you on your concerns. Operator, do we have any other questions for Ms. Duffy?
We do, from the line of Eugenia Cox from the state of Oregon. Please go ahead.
Hi, Eugenia.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a little confused but I know every state, like California, has different partnership agreements and things like that, so you're going to have different forms and stuff that a lot of us may or may not use. So I'm assuming that's the case of what he was talking about. Because a lot of us, what we do to put our tickets in use, we just send you a monthly batch of plan dates and closure dates, and they get put into a certain status, and then you send it back with all our status codes, the
mm-hmm.
3s, the 4s, all those other things.
Right.
And that's how we put tickets in use. Now, we are one of the states that also does ticket assignments,
mm-hmm.
and so we do that through the MOVEit system on any new ticket assignments, and then we are required to do, if we have to, we have 90 days to change from ticket in use to ticket assignment, and we can't use any system with that. We have to send a secure email to the VR help desk, SVR help desk at Maximus, to be able to do that. So right now we have those 3 ways of doing it, and I don't know if I'm in, I'm sure I'm not unique on how we're doing ticket in use, and then ticket assignments. So so is that part going to change? Are we going to have to still send secure emails when we have that 90-day period of window to be able to change from in-use status to ticket assignment?
So in-use status, you mean talking about changing a VR case, a cost reimbursement case, to a ticket case?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We have 90 days to change.
Well, if you go through the system, you'll be able to do that anytime. This is the requirement that I was given by ORDAS.
Okay, so now instead of sending a secure email to the help desk, we can actually go in and change it within that 90-day window.
Once you're notified. That no one gave me a 90-day window. It's if you have a VR case, you can convert it into a ticket case. You can also move the ticket assignment date forward from your initial VR, entered VR, whatever it is, status date. You could also convert it. Yes.
We can change the date of the
forward.
Ticket assignment?
Forward.
I thought that this date of the ticket assignment was the plan date or when they first started receiving benefits.
I see I'm being given fishy looks. All I can tell you is this is what you can do, is you can convert a VR case to a ticket case. At the same time, you could also move the assignment date for the ticket date further into the future. The reason I was given is that when you first open a case with a VR agency, you may not have done all of your paperwork, forms, and everything else yet. And you can start a VR case simply by showing up, whereas you cannot start a ticket case until you have a piece of paper signed by both the ticket holder and the agency. When it goes the other way, you can convert a ticket to a VR case, in which case you cannot move the date. And you can't do anything if there's a pending payment. But there's no time limit.
We don't assign a ticket until they go into plan.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
And that's what we send over. We send 1,000 people over every month to tell you everybody that goes into plan. And you look at it and determine how many of those folks that we send over are ticket eligible.
Okay, Eugenia, this is Desiree. Some of the changes that we made in the past were based on processes that were changing. The 90-day period has no significance anymore once we go into this type of automation. It was something that we were doing as a convenience to VR agencies based on the way you handle your workloads and do your assessments. And right now, we changed policy a couple of years back where, the 90 days really doesn't have as much significance as it used to in the past. So you'll be able to benefit from changing that status on your data file, going to the portal and changing that status at any time in the future. So that's going to be a benefit.
That is huge.
Yeah,
tell us now that because right now there's tickets that I can't change from in-use status because we've missed the window and they're denied by Maximus. So now you're saying, right now we're still under that 90-day window. We can't change it from in-use to ticket status, but in the future you're saying we won't have that 90-day restriction?
The limitation is whether or not you've been paid under the other system or whether anybody has been paid under the other system.
No, well, we can't change somebody to ticket status if we've been paid under cost reimbursement. That's a
right.
Given.
Well, that limitation
we're only going to be changing a person from in-use status to ticket status if they've never been paid by VR.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, that's huge, and this is the first I've ever heard of that because we've always been under that 90-day limitation.
Let me ask you a quick question. Is what you're trying to do is let's send them all off, and if they're eligible for a ticket, we want to sign them up for a ticket, but if they're not, then sign them up for cost reimbursement status, or are you trying to do something different?
I think that what I'm hearing is that this would drastically improve your triaging ability, where if somebody doesn't look like they're going to get to that 9 months of SGA, then you could just very conveniently switch them to ticket status and get milestone payments at least, if nothing else. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, that has nothing to do with it. How it works for us, we have a shared payment agreement with mental health. So we automatically, because of our time frame, we have till the end of the following month to report for the previous month, or we get penalized by Social Security. So we have to provide all the data for October by the end of November, for example, to you. And then we have 90 days from the date they go into plan or the assignment date to change it if we want to. The reason we would be changing it has nothing to do with whether we're going to get paid on one program or the other. It has to do with the fact that we have clients that are working with a mental health agency, and they're referred after plan. So they go into plan with us, and then the mental health agency starts working with them, and then they have to share with us that they're wanting to submit a dual client to us. So a lot of times it's after the fact that we know that they're working with this mental health agency to change it to ticket assignment for the shared payment agreement we have.
And from Social Security's perspective, the really important factor is that the beneficiary gets the protection from medical CDRs as soon as possible.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why we send over all of them, then they automatically go into in-use.
That's why we allowed it originally for, you know, you to send it over under cost reimbursement and later change your mind.
Yeah, and that we had that 90-day window.
You know, those aspects of which payment system actually made the most sense for you. But to have the Benny under plan as soon as possible. So it sounds like this would just be another benefit of the portal.
Yeah.
But remember, there is still that you still have to report opening cases or assignments timely. Or for ticket purposes, you may not receive all of the retroactive payment months.
Well, we're required. I don't know. Is there any states that aren't reporting in a timely manner?
No, Nate. Everybody's reporting.
Everybody, we have till the end of the following month to report the previous month, and I'm assuming that we're all doing that.
Yeah.
Well, I know that not everybody always does.
For the most part, yeah.
Well, the penalty.
The data.
Well, the penalty that was handed down to us if we didn't report was that you would reduce our cost reimbursements.
That's right. But there are VR agencies who do, who don't file claims.
Yeah, so there's so much encompassing this change, and there's so many questions involved with this. We need to have a call solely dedicated to just this subject. And then we have to have some guidance in writing on this, because there's so many things that I'm just hearing about and learning now that we had no idea was happening, were happening.
Well, I assume the subject you're talking about is what, the modernized claim system?
Well, that and these changes in the rules that have been dictated to us for so long, like the 90 days changing.
It hasn't changed yet.
Yeah, that hasn't changed yet.
Desiree just mentioned that. That hasn't happened.
I mean, this is a heads up about the VRMIS. I know that because this is all related to one system for SSA, we kind of discussed it as one system, and the way Steve laid it out, he talked about, you know, the portal and the platform that's going to allow us to modernize VRMIS. But, you know, for the sake of keeping things straight for what's important for folks to address right now, the information about VRMIS is on a different time frame, and there's an urgency to what we're doing with the EN portal. So most of our conversation has been about the EN portal and not about things that are going to happen later. And we have been emphasizing the primary things. But we can have a detailed discussion about what the portal changes will mean at that very detailed level.
Not too distant future.
And Steve is saying in a not too distant future. I mean, we've been saying hitting the highlights on how it will change, but we can definitely have that more detailed level discussion. But I do want to say for today, the presentation that Steve gave us on the VRMIS, keep that in your back pocket and take advantage of the offer to give us ideas about other things related to that project that you think would be helpful.
And like I said, unless I know what it's actually, I mean, I understand that you're a data person, but you got to understand that we're coming from developing the claims to what our requirements are for what our mandates are and everything else. We're not coming at it from a data. We're coming at it as this is what's been pounded into us for the last how many years.
And I'm glad to bring you new tidings. There's just one thing I'd like to mention based upon the list of questions on the side. It was a question from Lisa Kelly. Said, if a client is sitting in the counselor's office and has the ticket assigned, yes, you can give them a form where they can unassign the ticket. It's just that you cannot stick that directly into the EN portal yourself. It has to come from the person who owns the ticket or OSM or SSA. So you can unassign or close cases that are already yours, but you can't
unassigned or closed cases that are still open with somebody else, not electronically. You'll still be able to send in a piece of paper. The beneficiary can do something, send it off to SSA or send it off to OSM or whatever your usual business process is. You just won't be able to put that in at the end portal.
Now, am I still on?
Yes.
Oh, the suitability, we're still waiting. And, you know, if this is coming down, we won't, and they're shutting off the old portal, we need to know when we're going to get approved.
If there's an issue, we won't shut off the old portal.
Eugenia, have you been in touch with Natalie about the status?
Yeah, I keep asking, and she's saying there's no problem, but, I mean, there's nothing that's been directed, and... people are getting either right away or I've been waiting and I still haven't been approved. And the other thing that I wanted to say, too, was, you know, as far as the phone number, I know a lot of people have concerns about the phone thing with the call. And here's the thing on it. The phone number that we give to Social Security for mysSA.gov is our own personal information. When we go to log in, like I did last night, to look at my statement, it calls me and gives me an access code, and then I enter that in. Now, nobody's going to see my information, and so it's on my personal cell phone. But just because the same verification system goes to your personal cell phone doesn't mean that people are going to be calling you on your cell phone, that people are going to be using your cell phone or using your personal information for SSA. It's just the same system for verification. So as far as using your own personal cell phone, it's the same verification that's done when you use to get into your SSA.gov for the added extra security. Because I know I've saw many concerns about, you know, state-issued cell phones and things like that. So if people don't have a state-issued cell phone, I feel comfortable enough to give it my own personal cell phone to be able to do the verification.
And I also see a quick question from Donna Osborne. No, you cannot upload documents into this SSAEN portal, but what you can do is fax it in.
Thank you.
I think we're getting up towards, I think we've actually used up our whole hour. I want to thank Steve for taking the time to be over and give you the initial, I'm going to call it the initial presentation on the new Verma system. There, I'm sure we will have additional talks about this as the system is developed. I encourage all of you, talk to your systems people, think from a user standpoint. If you have ideas that would make this better, as Steve said, now is the time for us to know about them. We have all had to do the same things. We are users from this end. We're not systems people, but we've had to try and work with him and his staff to come up with a system that will make this whole thing as easy as possible, as least labor intensive, and eliminate as many human type errors as possible. And as he mentioned, even when it goes live, you will still have the opportunity or the option to mail in or fax in claims. Just know that if you do that, A, you will make Nate very unhappy. B, then they will still require the human people at our end to transcribe what you're sending in and get it in correctly. And to give you an example, every time that we send a check to the wrong agency, whether it's another state or it's the blind instead of general type thing, that's because of human error in transcribing agency codes and things. If you put the claim into the system yourself, that will eliminate those kinds of mistakes. So it's in your interest to avail yourself of the new system when it comes up, because it really will eliminate many, many, many of the human-type errors. I just want to take a few seconds to give you a couple of quick cost reimbursement updates, and then we'll probably have to wrap it up pretty quickly. Through last month in December, we paid out about $12 million in claims. It brought us up to like $29.5 million for the first quarter. That's like $8 million more than the same period last year, and I would love to say that I'd like to take credit for that all being because we're doing so much better. But if you remember, last year, the first quarter was when we had the government shut down, So that number is kind of artificially low. We are currently working September claims. So if you have pre-September claims that you have not received a decision on that have kind of disappeared because they were the old paper claims, and you know how there's always the potential for those to get lost or waylaid, then you should let us know, and we will either track it down or ask you to send us another one, and we'll get it processed for you. I also wanted to alert all of you to the fact that I had mentioned on a previous call that we are currently, the VR cost reimbursement program is currently the subject of an Inspector General audit here at Social Security. And that audit is looking at two aspects of the program, one of which is the actual, is the program serving its purpose? Is it doing what it was intended to do? And all of that. But the other one is looking at how accurately the claims process is working. They recently identified a sample of 200 claims. I believe they're all from FY13, but they identified these claims that they want to take an in-depth look at. I believe when I looked at the list that there were 38 different VR agencies that are responsible for those 200 claims. You will, those 38 agencies will in the next week or so receive letters from us asking for basically PVR type documentation on all of those cases to be sent in here because OIG is going to be looking at them. So if you see one of these notices, I would appreciate it if you would give it your utmost priority and get them in here promptly so that we can get this audit moving along as efficiently as possible. I think we are well past the time. I want to thank you all again for taking the time to do the call, for your questions, your interest, and we will look forward to the February call. Thanks, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you all for your participation today. Have a great day.